Hello and welcome to episode 62 of A Little Bird Told Me, the podcast where two freelance writers tell you all the tricks of the trade. We're here to save you from mighty embarrassment and mortifying mistakes and guide you to the very top of your chosen profession. Freelancing is a funny old job and we want to help you along the way. Tune into the podcast every week. And if you go to alittlebirdtoldme.podomatic.com, you can subscribe to ensure that you never miss an episode. Whether iTunes, an RSS podcatcher, or Stitcher Smart Radio are your platform of choice, we've made it super easy to sign up and to be the first to hear our latest words of wisdom. There you will also find any links we mention and our own websites and social media feeds, as well as the A Little Bird Told Me Facebook page. I am Philippa Willits.
And I'm Laurie Hartshorn, and today we're going to be talking about how to make sure that you're meeting your clients' needs. Building a freelance writing business, or any business for that matter really, is about finding and exploiting, or creating and exploiting demand for a service that you can offer. And when I say exploit, I don't mean anything untoward, I mean just making the most of something for the sake of your own benefit, and in this case, money to pay your bills. Now, in today's climate, where clients can, rightly or wrongly, and it's basically wrongly, get what they think is the same work for much less than you'd probably want to charge them, and also where thousands and thousands and thousands of freelance writers are all vying for the attention of big business clients, meeting your clients' needs will definitely be the difference between your business sinking or swimming.
So what we're going to do is go through various areas in which you can kind of check what you're doing and maybe change the way you work a little bit, just to make sure that you are doing your best to really meet your clients' needs. And the first area that we want to look at is listening. You should never assume that you know what your clients' needs are.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to assume that. If somebody contacts you wanting a blog, you might think, oh, they want a blog because blogs are good for this, that and the other, and never say to them, so what are your aims with this blog? What is it that you want to achieve with this blog? What do you want it to do for your business? Because it may actually be something entirely unrelated to what you think. Mm-hmm. And if you've guessed, and if you'll guess wrongly, then you're not going to do a great job, because if you think they're aiming for SEO, but in fact they're aiming for relationship building, then the blog's going to be written in the wrong way. And so while you can't assume you know what their needs are, what you need to do is basically ask them. If you are having a first contact with a potential new client and they say, we're looking for press releases, we're looking for news stories, talk to them about what, not just what they want, but why they want it. What are their goals for the piece of work? What do they hope is going to happen? Because without that information, you're not going to get anywhere.
Definitely. And I think as well as actually getting useful information from them, you can really strengthen relationships, particularly with new clients, but as well with existing clients. There's, you know, there's never too late a time to do this.
Yeah.
Letting them feel that they're being listened to and that you're prioritizing what they want, even if they're not quite sure what they want, which is often the case.
Yeah.
But feeling that you're being listened to is really, really valuable, and it's something that will make them stay with you rather than going somewhere else.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Because I think we've all had the experience, even just as a, say you're ringing up your gas company with a complaint. You know if you're not being listened to, and it's really frustrating. Or if something that drives me particularly up the wall is when you email a question to a customer service team and you get what's blatantly a form response.
Oh, I hate this so much.
That is answering a different question to the one you asked, but it has some of the same keywords in it, for instance. There is nothing that makes me angrier, I don't think. Because, and I can't help myself but reply and go, well, if you could read what I actually said and respond to that question, please, I would very much appreciate it. And it's so frustrating when someone assumes they know what you want.
Definitely.
Because it comes across as you don't feel valued,
Mm-mm.
you don't feel heard, you don't feel anything other than annoyance, I think.
Yeah, you've wasted your time communicating with somebody that's not listening to you.
Yeah.
And time is really valuable. I think it's a difficult balance to strike when you're a freelance writer because often your clients will need some level of guidance from you. They need your expertise. That's why they need a freelance writer. They need somebody who's got your skill set.
Absolutely.
So you do need to guide them. And sometimes, say if you're having a conversation with somebody for the first or second time, you do need to interject with suggestions of what they might be hoping to achieve. And, well, maybe if you did this, we could achieve such and such for you, or maybe we could increase website traffic by doing A, B, and C.
Yeah.
But as Pip's just said, you don't want to overstep the mark and just make assumptions about what they need.
Yeah.
Because you might be so busy trying to impress them with what your writing can achieve for them that you're not actually hearing what they're wanting to achieve.
Exactly, exactly.
So market research, when you're looking to take on new clients, market research is really important. You need to know who you're dealing with and consequently how you're going to deal with them.
Yeah.
So depending on how you're making contact with these prospects, you might want to bear certain things in mind. Now, one of the ways that you can make contact with people is via networking events. And when you go along to these networking events, active listening is really, really important if you're wanting to cinch a sale or at least get somebody's interest and get their business card off them.
Mm-hmm.
So as Pip and I have discussed before in our Networking Like a Ninja episode, really, I know.
I do feel we somewhat misrepresented that, but the title was so good that we couldn't not use it, frankly.
I disagree. I think it was absolutely accurate that you will, in fact, network like a ninja would network. Who knows if ninjas network? They're probably so sneaky, you wouldn't know even if they did.
True.
But when you're networking, you can't simply tell people about your services. You can't have, although it's good to have an elevator pitch, you can't give people stock responses because just as Pip said with her gas company, for example, people want to feel that you've tailored what you know yeah. to their needs. It's not about you, it's about them and how you can meet their needs. It's quite different.
I know at networking events, the most success I've had tends to be when I've spoken the least.
Mm-hmm.
Because if, say, I meet someone who runs their own small business
yeah.
and they ask what I do and I say, I'm a freelance writer, I do this, that, the other, which I, you know, may well introduce myself as. So if I then say, so if you need a new website, I'm the person to contact. Whereas they've actually already had a new website and they would be interested in something completely different. I've probably lost them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if I say, I'm a freelance writer, this is what I do A, B, and C, and then pause, that's when they will say, oh, I have been wondering about getting some help with press releases. Whereas if I launched into why I'm great at websites or why I'm great at a blog, then they would have thought, this wasn't something I could help them with. Listen, listen, listen.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you leave a pause and they don't come in with anything, you can ask them, what do they do? Because the truth is universally acknowledged, I'd say that people like talking about themselves.
Indeed.
Even if they don't, because it's a bit uncomfortable at a networking event. But at a networking event, you do have to talk. And the safest thing for people to talk about is what they do. And the more you know about them, the more you can tailor your speech in their direction.
Yeah, definitely. If you make an assumption about the kind of business they run, like if they say, I run a small shop, you might think, oh, there's not much copywriting I can do for a small shop. But they might, you know, first of all, what small means to one person isn't the same as it means to another. You don't know if they're running an online shop or a local shop. You don't know what they're selling and how much kind of potential there is in that for content.
You don't know who they're targeting, so how they reach people. They might reach people via the web or they might reach people
yeah.
using print literature.
Yeah, or it might entirely be an email newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
If you make assumptions, you're going to miss opportunities.
Absolutely. And being face-to-face with somebody is a really, really valuable opportunity, and it's something you don't want to waste. Now, you might not be going to networking events. You might just be contacting people on the internet and coming across people on social media, in which case it's important to know which kind of social media you need to be on. Because people, well, the clue's in the name, social media is social, and you can learn a lot from listening to people that you would like to target as clients on social media feeds. But in order to be able to do that, you need to be on the right social media feed.
Yeah.
Facebook, for example, is not altogether the best social media feed for B2B businesses.
Yeah, it can work, but it's certainly a far less intuitive way of doing B2B networking, I think.
Definitely. Whereas if you're looking for B2C clients,
perfect.
Facebook is perfect. Yeah. So for B2B clients, Twitter, I've always found, is very good. You've got a lot of people on there talking about a lot of complex things. And if you can insinuate yourself into a conversation or just be a bystander in a conversation, you can learn more about your prospects. And as we said, the more you know about these people, the more you can make sure that you're meeting their needs.
You can also set up very strategic searches. Especially if you use a tool like TweetDeck or Hootsuite, you can have a constant column open so that anybody who mentions, I don't know, dressmaking Sheffield will pop up on your screen in front of you whenever they do. Or you can do it manually. You can save searches on the Twitter website. And then you can just set that up and watch for a few weeks.
Definitely.
And see what are people's concerns, what are people wanting, what do people want to know, what's missing from people's lives who talk about whatever your chosen subject is. And it's a brilliant way. People, you don't have to do any work. You just watch what people say publicly. You know, compared to setting up surveys and saying, what do you want from a dressmaker in Sheffield? You know, you can just let people tell you.
Definitely. And it's not just a good way to find prospective clients either. It's a good way to formulate your content if you're looking for a client in that sector. Because as it says, if they're asking questions about, oh, I don't know, let's stick with a dressmaker, you know, where can I find a good dressmaker in Sheffield? There's a blog post in that.
Yeah. And if lots of people are saying, I want a dressmaker in Sheffield, but nobody's listing their prices, for instance.
Yeah.
Then, you know,
you'll know what the priorities are.
Exactly. And what a website needs to stand out. It's the listening tools available in the world of social networking are really mind-blowing when you compare to even 5 or 10 years ago.
You're basically able to eavesdrop on any conversation that's taking place online. And it's really amazing because that it can take a lot of the pain out of contacting new prospects as well. If you were to get in touch with a dressmaker in Sheffield and say, I've noticed on social media that there's a lot of discussion about the fact that dressmakers in Sheffield don't have very good websites and don't list their prices clearly. Notice that your website is, and then you can give a bit of insight into how the website's functioning. Would you be interested in talking about A, B, or C?
Definitely.
And it shows that you have your finger on the pulse, that you're interested in their business, have a concrete way to improve their business, and that you're in touch with prospective customers for them.
And you can back it up with links, screenshots. You can say, in the last week alone, 15 people wanted to know this. You could do graphs. Everybody's impressed by a graph.
I knew you'd go for something visual. You could do pie charts.
That's it. You know, so, and that's all ways of listening in a way that again, it's getting rid of those assumptions and listening to the reality of what people want so that you can meet the needs of your client.
This is it, because depending on how generalised or specialised you are, even if you're the most specialised person, you can't know any sector inside and out. You can't know what everybody in that sector is thinking and all the associated industries. So, you know, what you hear might not be what you're expecting to hear a lot of the time.
I
think it's good not to rest on your laurels and assume that you know a sector, even if you're a specialist in it.
Definitely.
sectors develop, don't they? You know, there's always something changing and growing and evolving.
Mm.
And I suppose particularly if you're a specialist, actually, you need to keep your finger on the pulse and just really, really listen to what people have got to say.
Definitely.
Now, another way to do this, staying on the same theme, is to subscribe to and read trade publications and trade blogs. Because it's not just the value that you're going to get from the articles themselves, but also from the comments below the line.
Mm.
So where you will have a trade publication about skip hire, for example, you will have people who are interested in skip hire. And where you have people who are interested in skip hire, you'll have prospective customers and their prospective customers. So you've not just got the people who you can target, you have the people looking for skip hire companies. So you can learn not just about your prospective clients' needs, but about their prospective clients' needs. You've got, again, it's the whole, it's like a social media feed in your specific industry.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's well worth subscribing to popular high traffic blogs and publications and e-newsletters, because that keeps a finger on the pulse without you having to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
That's a whole load of research, isn't it, that you don't have to do. You can go along and see what they're researching, because to stay popular, to stay high traffic, they will have to keep their finger on the pulse.
Yeah. Now, another thing that's important to do if you want to really focus on meeting your clients' needs is to be flexible and responsive.
This is always a tricky one, isn't it?
It is. It's... there's always a line to be drawn, and it's sometimes not 100% clear where that line is. But basically, you want to impress your clients, and you want to do the best by them. They are paying your bills, and you want them to feel thoroughly happy with what you're doing. And this does mean sometimes maybe taking on an extra piece of work when you weren't planning to. It means responding to your emails and phone calls fairly quickly and keeping on top of keeping them happy, really, but not at the expense of your own, you know, the rest of your business and your life.
I think this is it. When you start out as a freelancer, I think it's easy to go overboard trying to meet the needs of your clients. And given how eager people are when they start freelancing, it's a bit of a perfect storm, because you are likely to take on clients who don't pay you enough, in my experience. And usually, in my experience, again, it's the clients who don't pay you enough who tend to be the most demanding.
That is very true.
So when you start out, I'd put money on it that you're likely to think, oh, I can't do this, I can't cope with this, you know, I'm having to respond to emails at 11 o'clock at night, and, oh, this person's not paying me, and it's costing me money, and I don't know what I'm doing. So, as Pip says, there's definitely a balance to be met, and as you carry on freelancing, you'll realise how far you can stretch yourself, and indeed how far you should stretch yourself to meet your clients' needs and to be responsive to them without sacrificing your own well-being. And in some cases, you know, not just your free time, but the time you need for other clients.
I think something that's really important to bear in mind is that if the time you spend communicating with your clients or dealing with them in ways other than just writing stuff for them, if that's taking over and losing you money, then you're probably doing your pricing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, you're a freelancer, and a big part of that job is liaising with businesses.
Yeah.
And that has to be incorporated within your overall pricing structure.
Definitely.
And so if you think, no, this is taking up too much time and it's unpaid work, then look at your pricing, because you have to take into account that you're not just going to write stuff. You do have to be dealing with people on their terms as well as working to your own terms.
Absolutely. And there are ways of doing that, aren't there? You know, it's good to look at how long you're spending, because if one client is on the phone all the time and on the emails all the time, then it might be a problem with that particular client. But if you have a look across the board and you find that you're spending too much time across the board talking to people, then absolutely you need to look at trying to incorporate that into your pricing structure. And there are ways and means to do that. You can either increase the prices for, say, I mean, something I've done, I increase the price of a case study or a blog post if I have to do a phone interview for it.
Yeah. Now, other ways that you can be flexible and responsive are things like, often it's not unreasonable demands, it's just things that you may have to just shift things around a bit.
Mm-hmm.
If a client needs to speak to you and they're only free at 4 o'clock, then do everything you can to make sure you can speak to them at 4 o'clock. It's not a big deal, it shows them that you're making the effort, and it keeps things easy. Similarly, a way of being responsive can be to set an out-of-office autoresponder. If you're away, then your client won't feel like you're neglecting them if you don't get straight back to them.
Definitely.
And things like, if you're a proofreader and somebody wants you to work in the OpenOffice software suite rather than Microsoft Word, it's not a big deal. It's easy to do, and it shows them that you're willing to take steps to work with them.
Absolutely. It's good to keep in mind that you and your clients are on the same team, I think. Because sometimes you can feel quite resentful, especially if you're chopping and changing what you're doing. It can be easy to think, oh, for goodness sakes, I've just changed this and I've just done that, and then now I need to do this, and he's only free at 4, and it's the nature of freelancing.
It is.
It really is. Things aren't as structured as they would perhaps be in a salaried position. You do have to chop and change because it's your business. And that's just the way it is. So,
yeah.
You know, I found myself at first getting really stressed out and thinking, but I've just changed that and now I have to swap this around. And if you just accept it, generally it's less difficult.
Yeah, and, you know, the lack of structure in freelancing is one of the reasons a lot of freelancers get into it.
Yeah.
So, you know, go with it.
It is the other side of the coin that allows you to go out for lunches or allows you to do your shopping in the morning if you need to, or yes, go to doctor's appointments in the afternoon.
Exactly.
It's the same coin. So in terms of being flexible and responsive, it doesn't just go for looking after your existing clients either. It's actually a good thing to bear in mind when you're looking for new prospects as well, because part of winning new business, people always say, oh, how do you find new business? How do you get new customers? Part of it, and a large part, is just being in the right place at the right time and saying the right things.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be seen to be doing the right things and seen to be being the suitable person for them.
Yeah.
So there's no point saying the right thing if they're not there. There's no point being there if they are but not saying anything. You really do have to say the right thing at the right time in the right place.
Yep. And some of that will happen by very good planning, and some of it will happen by complete luck.
Almost miracles. Some of it, when I think how I've found some of my clients, I think, gosh, how did that happen?
Oh, I know. It's ridiculous sometimes. You know, you think, I worked really hard for client X. I did everything and eventually snagged them. And then client Y will just, like, almost trip up and land at your feet. And you think, how did that happen? But, you know, go with it. It's all good.
Yeah, if you move in the right circles, it's far, far more likely to happen. So I think that's a good time to interject with kind of a word on marketing. It's really good to plan and streamline your marketing rather than having a scattergun approach, because you can put hours and hours and hours of effort into hitting every possible social media platform and trying every different thing. It's far better to streamline your marketing activities and to respond to what works well. And to be able to respond, you need to be able to measure your marketing activities as well. So it's really worth having a look at coming up with a marketing plan. And there's so much online that will help you do that. And you can actually spend a lot less time just hitting the right targets than spending a lot of time hitting all the targets, many of which won't tick any boxes for your prospective clients.
Now, the next point that we wanted, that we thought, which is really important in terms of meeting clients' needs, is about being proactive. That sometimes you can feel like you're just sitting back and everything's going swimmingly.
That's always when things go wrong, isn't it?
Yeah, and you're kind of going with the flow and everything's working perfectly. But if you get too comfortable in that situation, you can suddenly find it all drops away. So being proactive is what we're going to look at next.
Definitely. And I think the first point that I want to make is that just because everything seems right doesn't mean it is. And that's a really sad fact. It is, but it is a fact. It's easy, as Pip says, to rest on your laurels and think, oh, everything's good, I'm sailing along.
Because there are times as a freelancer when that happens, you've got just the right amount of work, you've not got too much, you've not got too little, the money's poor, everyone's paying their invoices on time, and you just think, yeah, and you just think, I have mastered this now. We've all done it many times, and, you know, and it feels lovely, but what we don't hear is the Jaws music in the background.
No, it's definitely true. What was I going to say? You made me laugh just thinking about Jaws. I don't know why that tickled me so much. This is you on a Lila with a cocktail. And there's a big danger in thinking that everything's okay and that everything will always be okay and sort of sitting there on your Lilo with your cocktail, just thinking about how marvellous freelancing is. Because as a freelancer, you don't have the security that you have in a salaried position. No, I mean, it's sensible to put something in place when you start working with clients that says, oh, you know, month's notice, for example. But unless you're willing to really pursue that, depending on circumstances, that might just not have any bearing. You know, they might decide that they don't need a copywriter anymore, effective immediately. And are you really going to try and force them to keep to that 1 month notice period?
And a lot of businesses that hire copywriters, that hire freelancers, do so because they don't want to commit to a certain amount of work at a certain amount of time. It's the very appeal of freelancers. You know, that's why they will go with a freelancer rather than hire someone who they'd have to provide a certain amount of work for.
Absolutely. So while you might be able to persuade them to give you a notice period, unfortunately a lot of clients aren't ideal clients, and when they don't need you anymore, they won't need you. And that's as far as it will go. So don't assume that just because everything looks okay and your client's not saying that anything's wrong, that there aren't things going on in the background.
Yeah.
It might be that the company is planning on downsizing. It might be that they're planning on increasing their marketing capacity in-house. Mm-hmm. And they might be wanting to hire a copywriter in-house or a marketing exec. It might be that they're not happy with your work. It might be that, you know, there's something about your work that's not suiting them. And I know it sounds obvious, and you might think, well, why wouldn't they say something? But some people just don't.
They're too polite, and they'd rather just never deal with you again than actually say it's not good enough.
Yeah, no, it's completely true. So you need to be proactive in order to keep your clients happy. You know, they might not even know that something's wrong. But if you find that their responses to you are getting a little bit lukewarm, or that they used to be in raptures about your blog posts, but now they're just like, thanks, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
You know, they might not even know what it is, but it's your job to find out and to be proactive and to make sure that you give them as little reason as possible to become dissatisfied with your work.
Yeah, because also it impresses clients if you come across as having thought something through beyond what they were expecting.
Definitely, actually, that's a really good point. I was there with all the doom and gloom, but there's a positive side, isn't there?
Like, if you say you provide regular blog posts for a plumbing service, a plumber, for them it's a content marketing tool and it's a lead generation tool. If you do your weekly post or whatever it is, but then if you once in a while get in touch with your client, the plumber, and say, I've noticed that three of your competitors have done this particular thing recently and it seems to be being successful. So I did some keyword research and I did some wider research on other plumbing blogs, and this is what I suggest we do, just maybe as a one-off, see how it goes. Mm-hmm. They will be impressed that you've taken the time to do the extra research to compare with what their competitors are doing, and to take the time to go ahead with it, basically.
Absolutely, you know, because it's just adding value to what you do for them. You know, it's easy as a freelancer to think, well, they're only paying me for this.
Yeah.
They're only paying me for 5 blog posts a month, so why should I spend more time not being paid? Particularly if you don't have a salary, why should I spend chargeable time doing work for nothing? But it's 10 times easier to keep a client than to get a new one. That will never stop being true.
Definitely. Plus, back to what we said earlier, if doing anything extra like that is for nothing, then your billing is wrong.
Yeah.
You're not taking the right things into account when you set your fees.
Definitely. And like I say, you know, we're reiterating things that we said earlier, but you and your clients are on the same team.
Mm.
If you find yourself resenting doing anything for them and you don't have at least something invested in their business, then there's something amiss. You have to be able to invest your energies into your client's business, because the better their business does, it may well be the better that your business does.
Yeah, if you're blogging for the plumber and he starts to get twice the number of leads as before you were blogging for him, then he's happy, so he keeps you on.
Mm-hmm.
And then when his mate, the electrician, says, where have you suddenly got all your work from? And the plumber says to the electrician, well, I've hired this woman who does blog posts and my leads have doubled. Then the electrician will get in touch with you, so you've got extra work, and then you do magic things to her website. And then she doubles her leads, and then her mate, the bricklayer, gets, you know, it works, it's beneficial in so many ways. Not
it's
least.
Starting to come out like a really bad joke, and then the plumber says to the electrician.
So it does more than just impress the client that you're taking the care. If it improves their results, then that will improve things for you, because they'll keep you on, they'll recommend you, you'll have better case studies to give to potential new clients where you can say, I doubled the plumber's leads. I don't know who this plumber is. He's doing very well, thanks to me.
Richard Branson of plumbers.
And so, yeah, it has more than just that immediate gratification of someone saying, wow, that's brilliant, thank you.
Definitely.
It can go a lot further.
And not just referrals, although referrals are one of the best ways to get new work. I mean, they're so amazing, aren't they?
Oh, definitely.
Because it's a real foot in the door, and it tends to be business owners talking to business owners.
Yeah, it takes a layer of the process out, which is proving your credibility, I guess.
Absolutely. But in terms of other benefits, it may be that if this fabled plumber does super well, and their blog doubles the number of customers that they take on, it may be that they'll need more content work from you.
Yeah.
So, you know, the benefits really are numerous, and it's worth it. Besides which, you should actually just care about doing a good job for people.
Exactly. You know, a lot of the reason, you know, if I send off a piece of work that I know is really good, you know, sometimes you just go, I have mastered this.
Yes.
This one, these 750 words are the perfect 750 words for the situation. But, you know, sometimes you just know you've nailed it.
You go above and beyond, don't you? And it's okay to go, do you know, that was a really good piece of
work. That's it. And like Laurie says, it can be great for business reasons, but also, if somebody has gone out of their way to hire me, I really want them to feel good about that. So when I want them to be pleased, it's partly for all those strategic business reasons, but it's also because I really, you know, I enjoy what I do and I want them to be pleased with it. It can be just that.
Absolutely. I've taken on quite a new client, and they're a marketing agency. And of course, with them being a marketing agency, they have a number of clients of their own.
Yeah.
So I've been doing the content for them. And one of these particular clients, has a reputation for being quite difficult, and they've not been satisfied with some of the work that's gone through before. You know, they've not been super impressed with some of the content they've had before. So there are already preconceptions with that particular client. So I was warned before I did a case study for this person, and I really put my back into it. I really put extra effort in, and I put a lot more time in than I charged for. In the interest of building a stable base for future work.
Absolutely.
And I didn't hear anything back for a while, and I thought, maybe this person's not impressed with this either. But then I got an email from the marketing agency saying, oh, we forgot to tell you, but they were really happy.
Yeah.
I was like, amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just pure smugness. It was pure smugness.
But it feels good. And you're in the wrong job if you don't care what someone thinks of your writing.
Absolutely. And I was so pleased because that wasn't just going to be pleased with anything and wasn't just going to go, yeah, that's amazing. You know, this person had ideas of what they wanted and I'd met those needs and it felt really good.
Good, good. And, you know, with good reason.
Mm-hmm. And that does all the world of good for me because, you know, this person wasn't pleased with the content they were receiving previously. So now there's something else underlining the fact that I am different from the content provider that they were using before and that I am potentially better.
And
all reputation points, isn't it?
Yeah, and not only do they think highly of you, that gets passed on to the marketing agency who are all too aware that this is a demanding client. Mm-hmm. So that makes you look good in their eyes as well. So, you know, that one time of putting a lot of extra work in will pay off in lots of different ways.
Absolutely. And the minute I had that feedback, I thought, oh, I don't mind that I put all the extra time in.
Exactly.
Oh, it's so nice when something like that drops into your inbox. And you have to care about things like that, don't you? And that kind of satisfaction drives you to be proactive for clients.
Yeah, I hired a guy earlier this week to migrate two of my websites to a new host. Mm-hmm. Now, this was a very, very anxious 24 hours for me.
It really was, honestly.
I was so frightened. Don't break my sites. Please don't break my sites. Please don't break my sites. Anyway, he didn't break my sites. And he successfully migrated them. And I'd hired him from a freelancing website that I'd heard about from Laurie called People Per Hour.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, which is, it's a freelancing site that feels very different to the Elance, freelancer.com type ones to me.
It's the only one I've used. And I'm not keen on the others.
Yeah, it feels like less of a meat market where, you know, everybody's going for the bottom prices. It feels a bit more reasonable in terms of as a buyer, but also as a service provider. But I didn't feel like I was exploiting anybody to get the work done, which also helped. Anyway, and he did the work really well. He communicated with me throughout. And so I left him glowing feedback afterwards because he had done a great job. And those kind of sites live or die by the feedback that people leave. And that's partly why you can hire someone you don't know, because you can see what other people have said about them. But anyway, the point is I went out of my way to leave him very good feedback because he deserved it. And I hope it helps him get more work. And he got back to me and he was just like, thank you so much. And he was really pleased, and he was partly pleased that he'd got such great feedback, but he was also genuinely pleased that I was pleased with what he'd done. You know, I could tell that he was proud of having done a good job. Aww. And I would hire him again without question. Absolutely. If I needed to.
And I've said to you, haven't I, that
yes, you might need it, and would I pass the details on? And I would happily. And that's partly because he did a good job, but it's also partly because he really tried. You could tell he was proactive in doing what I needed, which included emailing me occasional reassurances. and it made a difference to me. So it makes him stick in my mind beyond someone who did a good job, but someone who did a good job and cared that they did a good job.
That's really, really good. You know, and I think it all comes back, doesn't it, to listening to your clients.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean active listening. And active listening includes three types of listening, which are verbal communication, non-verbal communication, which includes things like body language, tone of voice, facial expressions, and intuition, which is your gut instinct. Say that you've had a call with somebody, but you get the feeling that they're not quite reassured,
or
not quite satisfied. So you find ways to add reassurance or satisfaction or extra value into that communication with them. And if you actively listen to your client, it will help you find ways to be proactive. So say that, you know, say that you're the tech guy doing the migration. This is as far as I know about migrating websites, is that you are some kind of tech person. So this tech person doing Pip's website migration, you get the impression that maybe this Ms. Philippa Willits is slightly nervous about
this particular task, yes.
Perhaps she's slightly nervous. You know, she doesn't say as much, although I know she did.
I think I did say, please don't break them. And he replied and said, please do not worry, I won't break anything. And then I felt guilty.
You felt guilty. Not too guilty, though. She's like, oh, I'm so worried, honestly. So the verbal communication is her saying, I'm worried, please don't break my site. And being proactive and responding to that and saying, and being responsive and saying, don't worry, I won't break your site. The non-verbal communication is, you know, the number, perhaps the frequency of emails. This isn't based on HIP now, this is theoretical.
Yeah.
The frequency of emails, or maybe the tone of the email, or what they don't say. Maybe you still get the impression that they're a bit worried, so you decide to be proactive by emailing them frequent updates.
Yes.
Just to let you know, and I've done this with another client.
I've done that too,
Just to let you know, as of this morning, I've spoken to such and such, I've interviewed this person, the first blog post's written, the second one's halfway done, and the case study's got the framework in place, I just need to write that up. ETA is going to be tomorrow lunchtime.
Yeah.
You know, and nothing needed to be said. I didn't need to send that email to those clients. But if you can be proactive and respond to something that is non-verbal from your client, then all the better for it. You're being proactive. And if you go with your gut instinct, if there's nothing there, but you just think, you know, if I were one of my clients, I might be nervous about this, or I might be concerned about that, or I might want to know about A, B, or C, you can be proactive again. Or, for example, I had a client who needed a press release, but I got from their communications that they'd not really sent out a press release before. So I sent a whole load of extra information on what to do with your press release.
Yeah, this is something that I do. I created a PDF document on how to get the most of a press release. And whenever I send a press release, particularly to a new client, I attach this document. And I know Laurie liked this idea and does it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me half an hour to, you know, research it, write it, and make it look a little pretty, and also brand it so that it was clearly mine. Whereas each client, and so maybe an hour's work in total.
Yeah.
And yet each new client that receives it feels like they've got this this goes into the next point we're making, but they feel like they've got something extra. They've got a freebie. Everybody loves a freebie. Mm-hmm. And it can also, which is also the point, help them get the most out of your press release, which then makes them think, wow, she writes really good press releases.
Definitely. So just a little bit of proactivity has gone such a long way in all
Definitely.
Of the places. So what we're going to talk about now is how and when to go the extra mile in a bid to meet your client's needs, and indeed to exceed your client's expectations. Yeah. That's always a nice thing to aim for, you know, meeting their needs and going a little bit beyond.
If you exceed your client's expectations, more often than not, you have a very happy client who, you know, will stick with you. I always try to exceed expectations in one way or another, and it's really worthwhile. So sometimes it might be that you will take on, for instance, some occasional rush work for a client who is very valuable to you.
Yeah.
All these points link to each other. And so this is also connected to being flexible and responsive and being proactive. But it might be that once in a while you say yes to some weekend work when you're planning to have a weekend off, because the client is genuinely, you know, they're suddenly going to a trade show next week that they didn't think they had a place at, and they suddenly need leaflets and brochures. And once in a while you can say, I will work this weekend because I really value this client's existence in my business.
Mm-hmm.
And that, although it will annoy you over the weekend where you're thinking this is my time off, in the spirit of keeping a good client can be worthwhile. There are also times when you can offer something to a client that doesn't really have any direct benefit to you whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
I recently had a situation where one of my clients asked if I could recommend somebody who could do a particular task. And another of my clients specialised in that particular task.
That's so fortunate, isn't it?
I know, it was unbelievably lucky.
It's one of those moments where you were like, yes, the universe is aligned.
Exactly, and so I could say, you know, I could direct client A to client B. Client A loved me because I'd found the solution to his problem. Client B loved me because I'd sent him some extra business. Now, none of that got me any work directly, but what it did get me is goodwill from both of them that will be repaid over time. I know it will. There's no, you know, direct, you sent me that work, so I'm sending you this work. But what it does is put you in a good place, a happy place in their mind.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that will pay dividends.
Yeah, absolutely. And were we not close friends, we've certainly done things in the past that would really kind of, it would build up goodwill between the two of us. You've sent work in the past, I've sent you work in the past, you know, there's no direct benefit there. So were we not close friends, it might be the kind of thing where you think, oh right, well, you know, she sent me work in the past, I could refer this work to her, I'm too busy to take this on, she's a good person to refer that to.
Yes.
Now there's no benefit to Pip really directly for saying to somebody, I'm afraid I'm a little bit too busy to take that on at the moment, however, if you'd like me to recommend somebody, I can recommend someone who's a good proofreader, who's a good copywriter, who's a good copy editor, and then yours truly gets recommended.
Yeah.
What that means is that Pip has been able to recommend something to a fellow freelancer, and she's also been able to not disappoint a customer.
That's very true. If you just go back to them and say, sorry, I'm too busy, they'll think you're really obnoxious and that you'll never hear from them again.
Yeah.
Whereas if I could say, I'm so sorry, I'm overrun, I can 100% recommend this woman, here's her details, then they will have a much better feeling about the whole interaction.
As you say, it's goodwill, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And also, you know, it, like Laurie says, we are friends and we do help each other out in numerous ways, work-related and not.
Mm-hmm.
But it's even if we were just colleagues and not particularly close, it presents a goodwill between us that
absolutely.
If I send you work, you might then be more inclined to send me work, you know.
Absolutely. Because a freelancer, as freelancers, you don't get paid holiday, for example. You don't get paid leave. Or, you know, you don't get paid sick leave.
Yeah.
But sometimes you need a holiday and sometimes you need to go off sick. And it's something that Pip and I have discussed that, you know, potentially we could look after each other's businesses.
Yeah.
If the other person needed that.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's something that offers you extra value and extra security.
Yeah.
And it's something that you wouldn't otherwise have. So goodwill, you know, it was my old boss who used to say it. She said you have to have money in the bank to take out money.
It's so true. If, yeah, it would be unreasonable of me to suddenly expect a favour from Laurie if I had never done anything at all that showed that I was happy to do a favour for her. That's just a life, that's just a rule of life.
It's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's just true.
Yeah.
And another way that I've been proactive for clients, sort of talking about your referring there, another way that I've done something similar is that I upload blog posts for one particular client.
Yeah.
Now, it would take me just as much time, really, to upload. I work with them via Basecamp, and it would take me just as much time, really, to upload a blog post to Basecamp, email it to them, as it does. It takes me perhaps 5 minutes more to upload the blog post and add in the metadata and add in a picture and to click send. But it's so much extra value for the client because it's a plug-and-play blogging service. I find the subject, I write it, and I upload it. And there's a trust there now that they don't even need to see the blog post.
Yeah.
I just upload it for them. So I'm basically keeping their blog going for them.
Yeah.
And it's not that much extra work for me. As I say, it's another 5 minutes, but I'm not going to quibble over five minutes when it keeps my clients so happy.
Yeah. Similarly, if I'm writing, I've got a particular client who runs an SEO business, and I write blog posts for him. And sometimes they're kind of instructional, step-by-step, how to do A, B, or C.
Mm-hmm.
And I will often include screenshots in that.
Yes.
And he initially, the first time I sent a post with screenshots, said, you know, should I pay you more for the post with screenshots? Because mm-hmm. it's taking you an extra time. But for me, it made far more sense to say no, it's the same price. Because,
absolutely.
First, because I don't want him to feel like I'm chancing it.
Yeah.
But also, if I'm writing a step-by-step, it makes my job easier.
Yeah.
If I can include a screenshot that points to the thing you have to click on.
Yeah.
But also, for the extra work, which is maybe 5 minutes extra work on a 2 hour piece of work, then it's not worth adding anything to the fee. Because it's not that much time, and the client feels like he's getting an extra.
This is an interesting point, isn't it? Because often going the extra mile, it takes more imagination than it does effort.
Yes, that's so true.
You know, you can think, oh, going the extra mile, but that, you know, that leads to a slippery slope and, oh, I'll end up working for free. But really, with Pip's screenshots, for example, and with my uploading things to WordPress rather than just emailing them across,
yeah.
All it took was a bit of thought.
Yes.
All it took was a bit of thought, thinking, how can I make life easier for this client?
Yeah.
It doesn't take as long. It does not take as long. If it took me a long time, I wouldn't do it, because it wouldn't be the extra mile. It would be the extra marathon. It would be an extra piece of work.
There's another benefit to going the extra mile, which is that it may be that you learn a new skill. And so say, for instance, this isn't true, but looking at Laurie's example of uploading to WordPress rather than mm-hmm. emailing, say Laurie had no WordPress experience
mm-hmm.
and she felt like she was learning how to use it, then there can be a real benefit in offering that client to do it. You will upload it to WordPress yourself. That's no problem. You won't charge any extra. Because that will also teach you how to upload to WordPress.
Well, this has actually been true with the Basecamp. I didn't know how to do Basecamp.
That's it. And so you can offer this free service while using it as a way to learn how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the future, maybe expand it into something more substantial. And then it's a whole new service you offer.
Absolutely. Like I say, you know, it's a perfect example, because while I am familiar with WordPress, I wasn't familiar with Basecamp at all.
That's it.
And I panicked and I thought, oh my goodness, you know, this client said, oh, I'm going to set up a Basecamp and we'll use that. And I thought, oh dear.
The first time I used Basecamp, I was the same. He was like, you okay with dealing with it all on Basecamp? And of course I was like, yeah.
They're like,
And it's actually, I think we'd both agree, it's more intuitive than it might sound.
It's so, so easy.
Yeah.
But now I can proactively say to new clients, it's fine to deal with me by email. I'm fine to upload things to Basecamp. Yeah. And I'm also happy to upload things to WordPress.
Exactly. And so doing it for free for one person can become a proactive service offering.
Absolutely.
For another.
You know, and you can readjust your fees for new clients. So.
Oh, yeah.
So you can say to your existing client, no, don't be daft, it takes me 5 minutes extra.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that you can package it more intuitively in the future for new clients, you can say, I offer just the text for X pounds. If you'd like it uploading to WordPress complete with metadata and an image, then I can do that for, say, £5 more.
Yeah.
You know, there are ways and means to do that. You know, you don't have to, because it will start adding up if you start doing sort of 10 minutes extra for every single client.
Yeah, or all your little extras for one client. Then it's an hour, Yeah.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, there are ways and means to really make it work for you.
And what we touched upon just then is also really important. Everything we've said about being proactive, being flexible, being responsive, going the extra mile is very important. But, that's not the same as saying you should do anything and everything a client demands, regardless of how reasonable it is.
Absolutely. You know, because at the end of the day, your time is chargeable. So you need to keep a handle on the extras and make sure that, one, there is a return on investment and that there is a benefit and that you don't have a client who's all take, take, take. And sadly, they do exist sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to make sure that they're not adding up, even if your client's the loveliest client in the world, that they're not adding up to what's significant chargeable time.
Yeah, if you're in a salaried job and your boss is constantly asking you to do things that aren't strictly in your remit, it doesn't really matter because they're paying you regardless of what you do. But as a freelancer, it is different. And so if somebody is expecting loads of extras, then it's not reasonable.
Absolutely. And there are certain warning signs that you can look out for, because when you start out, you really want to meet everybody's needs.
Yeah.
And as we said at the start of this episode, meeting people's needs is good. That's what this whole thing is about.
Yes.
But, there are some people who will take advantage of that either once or twice or consistently. And you need to be able to know what's reasonable and what's not. And it's not always straightforward at the start.
Oh, definitely.
Particularly as you don't have colleagues to discuss it with. You know, it's not easy to work these things out on your own, which is why things like this podcast and blogs for freelancers are very useful resources to have.
Mm.
Because you can sound off and you can say to people, oh, my client keeps expecting me to do this, or my client's expecting me to do that. So the first warning sign that you need to look out for, really, is if the activity is costing you money.
And this can be based on clients' unreasonable demands, or it can be based on you having priced your services naively and not taken into account the fact that freelancing, you do need to pay for time that isn't writing. But if you're confident you've priced your services well, perhaps it's just one client. You know, if all your clients you feel are costing you extra money, then you've priced yourself wrong.
Yeah.
If most you feel it's very fair, and then there's one that is actively costing you money because you're having to spend time doing something when you could be doing something that you're being paid for, then this is definitely a warning sign to look out for.
Absolutely. And there are certain things you can do to protect yourself, varying from just cutting down the little freebies and maybe starting to add a few more to your invoice. I mean, you'll have to behave in a way that suits this client. So not all of this advice will suit. Putting a writing agreement in place. For example, if they want 5 or 6 rounds of amends to every blog post from you.
Yeah.
It might be, you know, obviously if it's mistakes that you've made, then there's a problem with your writing. But if they just decide that, I forgot to tell you this, and can we add this in? And, I forgot to mention that, and it would be really good to talk about this, and I just spotted this in the paper, can you add that in as well? That's the kind of stuff where you might think, I need to make an agreement with this person that one round of amends is included.
Yeah.
Anything else is chargeable as per my hourly rate afterwards.
And there are some of these things that often once you've been through them once or twice with clients, then you just begin to insist on them from the beginning.
Yeah.
If you've had a few clients that have tested your patience, wanting amend after amend, then like most freelancers, you'll quickly start being clear from the beginning how many rounds of edits are included in your fee.
Definitely.
So often you just need to go through it once or twice before you then just put it as part of your general work agreement.
And then you can decide when you want to be flexible with that.
With everything we've said before.
Yeah.
If you
put something in place, can't you like a writer's agreement and say, look, I include one round of amends, but if they need a couple more amends making and you really value them as a client and they're normally ace,
Yeah.
Don't be like, "Ooh, well, according to our contract."
Yeah, and especially because, you know, especially if you're in a situation where you're aware you may not have done the best job in that particular case, then
absolutely.
Yeah. So it's often it can be a close call, but you'll often have instincts about it.
Yeah, it'll just strengthen your position, won't it, to be aware of these things. The second point is if it's stressing you out consistently.
Yes, everybody has days where everything feels stressful and every client feels unreasonable. And sometimes that's fine, you just have one of those days.
Mm-hmm.
But if a particular client is stressing you out day after day or week after week,
mm-hmm.
then this is something to look at as well.
True. If you start to dread hearing from them because their demands are getting so excessive.
Mm.
I think we've all had clients like that, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where I had one client who wanted me to go around for lunch rather than paying for meetings. And it's, you know, there are certain things that get really, really silly.
Yeah.
And you start dreading hearing from that person because they're always finding ways to try and push you the extra mile.
Yeah, I read a blog post, I can't remember where, but it was on a freelance writing blog, and it the title intrigued me because it was something about why the writer was going to refuse to write guest posts anymore. And this wasn't guest posts on their own behalf, it was guest posts on their client's behalf. And I thought that's odd because I sometimes have clients who want me to write posts that they can then guest post on other blogs, and
mm-hmm.
it's the same as writing them a blog post. And
yeah, it doesn't really matter where they put it in the end, does it?
That was my thinking, but then when I read the article, it turned out that there are clients who expect their writer to not only write the post, but to approach every blog in the industry.
Oh, no.
To try and negotiate terms about how many links you can get in your guest post,
mm-hmm.
and then write the post and give it to that third-party site.
Mm-hmm.
And that writers were finding, nobody is shocked surely at this, but writers were finding that they could write their post in an hour and a half as usual,
mm-hmm.
but then they might spend 5 or 6 hours trying to find a blog that would host it.
Yeah.
And that's when I thought, of course they're refusing to do it from now on, because so I commented and said, I'm perfectly happy to write guest posts, but I've only ever done it in a way where my client or their marketing agency or whatever has found somewhere to host it, has done all the negotiations, and all I'm doing is writing the post as I would be writing it anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the, I can totally understand why writers are stressed if they're having to do all that extra, you know, when it's not really their role. So that is a sign of being exploited, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I had something similar, and it's from one of my favourite clients, so it absolutely wasn't exploitative, it was just them not really knowing about the process. I'd written them a press release, and they said, right, when are you going to send it out? And I said, well, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
I'm not going to send it out, because when you send out a press release, you have to not only send it out, but you have to follow up.
Yeah.
You have to deal with any of the responses that come back in. You have to negotiate terms. And aside from that, it doesn't look very good coming from a random freelance writer's address.
That's it. I was thinking, if nothing else, it has to come from one of their email addresses.
Absolutely. So instead of saying to them, as I might have done when I'd started out, oh, okay, I'll send it tomorrow, I said to them, I'm sorry if there's been a miscommunication. That's not actually part of what I do. I'm just the content production side of things. However, and this is where Pip's marvellous idea came in, I've attached something here that tells you step by step how to send out a press release, how to follow up, and how to get the best chance of being included in your chosen publications.
Yeah.
If you need anything else from me, please don't hesitate. I'm available on the phone as well, so if there's anything you're not sure about, give me a call.
Yeah, absolutely. And that resolves...
They were happy. They were super, super happy. They were like, oh, sorry, didn't realise. Whoops, my bad.
Well, that's it. Sometimes it is naivety on the part of the client rather than a desire to take you for everything you've got.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's always good to work off that premise as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because it stops you becoming bitter. You know, it can be really easy because some people are taking the proverbial. Mm-hmm. Some people will do what they can to get what they can from anybody they can. But some people just They don't realise, you know, and it's easy. I think we've discussed this before, you know, when you said if you've had a busy Saturday out in town and people have been knocking into you and elbowing you in shops, then the first person who bumps into you on the street when you get home, you let fly and you have a huge go at them. And you can't do this with clients. You have to just treat them all as though they were just naive as opposed to really annoying. And then if it keeps happening consistently, that's when you start to deal with things more firmly.
And a sign, another sign to look out for, rather than necessarily what they're doing, is how it's making you feel.
Yeah.
If we've mentioned if you're feeling stressed, but also if you're feeling resentful, if you're feeling angry, if you're actually starting to hate their name showing up in your inbox. Yeah.
Absolutely.
These are also, it might be signs that you're not happy in other ways. You know, everybody has a bad day where they don't want to hear from anybody, frankly.
Yeah.
But if it's more consistent, if it's more long lasting, look at how it's making you feel. Do you really hate hearing from them? Do you feel like you're being taken advantage of? Do you feel like it's affecting your ability to do what you're supposed to be doing?
Yeah, it might well be that the more you resent somebody, the less willing you are to do a good job for them. And while that might be fair, they might be the most awful exploitative client in the world, and they might be doing it completely deliberately, you'd be better off getting rid of them than doing a bad job for them.
Definitely, because then you'd be, if you did a bad job kind of half deliberately or because you didn't care, you're then compromising your own integrity. You're making yourself look as unprofessional and as bad as they're being, and that's not a position you want to be in.
You need to be able to be in a position where you're doing your best for your clients, and if you're feeling exploited, you're not going to be meeting your clients' needs, but also your career isn't going to be meeting your needs, and your work isn't going to be meeting your business needs. So it's a whole kettle of fish, really.
And so really, what we've looked at, we've been looking at meeting client needs, but not at the expense of your own needs. If you feel you're being compromised, if you feel you're being exploited, then that's a situation you need to get out of.
Definitely.
If, however, you have clients who are respectful, who appreciate what you do, then you will find yourself wanting to go the extra mile. You'll want to do a bit more for them and make them happy, and you will start thinking of creative, proactive ideas that can really build on the relationship you've already got and create an even better situation for you and for your clients.
That's so true, because as copywriters, we don't just write what we want. No, we don't, do
you? It's so true.
I don't want to write about waste management half the time, but it's half the time it's what I do.
And even if it's the topic we want to write about, we may have to write from an angle that we don't want to write from.
Absolutely. And you can inject a level of pleasure into your business by finding creative ways to really meet your customers' needs. Mm. It's a nice feeling. It's a nice feeling to know that you have a business that is invaluable to people.
Mm.
It's a really, really nice feeling.
And that's you.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That you are your business.
Yeah.
And it's just a nice thing to have done. Try and embrace the ups and downs of a freelance business and really make sure that you're not stuck in a salaried mindset. So if you hear from a client on a Saturday morning and they say, I'm so sorry to contact you on the weekend, we've just been invited to a trade show. There's a spare stand. We'd love to go, but we need a press release doing, and we need it by Monday morning. Could you help us?
Yeah.
It's just thinking, oh my God, what the hell? Contacting me on the weekend? This is my weekend, Monday to Friday. That's when I work. And it is when I work. I do work Monday to Friday, you know, 9 to 5, per, you know, ish. But it's not a salaried job. Freelancing is partly about being flexible. So just bring yourself back down and think, right, come on. You know, I go for long lunches, I do brunching, I have appointments, I go to networking.
Yeah.
You're flexible in the week when it suits you. You know, we all love a bit of flexibility when we fancy a long lunch or a cream tea in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So when it doesn't perhaps suit you as much, try not to take it too much to heart. just part and parcel of the job, isn't it?
Yeah, there's an example that I think I've mentioned before on the podcast, but it highlights that quite well, which is I was having a busy week, and there was one client that was pushing my limits a bit, mm-hmm. and demanding a lot more than we had agreed in a very urgent way, which is very stressful.
Mm. It's my panic is your panic.
That's it. And then right in the middle of it, one of my very regular, very valued, very nice clients said, "I don't suppose you could do an extra blog post for us this week, could you?" And I remember emailing Laurie and going, "I can't believe you want some extra work tomorrow. When am I supposed to do work before tomorrow?" And Laurie just thankfully said, "I don't think he was really being that demanding. I think he was
just asking.
Just wondering, and that's okay." But because I was in this state of stress, and I was in quite a state of defensiveness because somebody else was pushing my limits, my quick, immediate reaction to a very polite request, thankfully this reaction went to Laurie rather than the client, was like, "How can people want even more from me?
And God, haven't I got enough on my plate?"
That's it. Whereas Laurie kind of, as soon as I read her response, I instantly knew she was right. I was like, it kind of tripped me back. I was like, "Oh, of course." So I could get back to this guy and said, "I'm really full, but I could do it, you know, in 2 days. Would that be okay?"
Yeah, I said you'd done it. You could do it by Friday rather than Thursday.
That's it. So
they were super happy, weren't they? They were like, "Oh, thank goodness."
That's it. So we all ended up happy, but it's, there's always a line, and sometimes it's difficult to recognise.
Absolutely. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about being human, isn't it?
Of course.
Because when we're run off our feet and we feel exploited and we feel like we're not getting things done, somewhere inside we feel like we're failing.
Yeah.
And when you feel like you're failing, you get defensive and it all spirals from there. But really, it's just about juggling plates and just squeezing a little bit of extra value out where you can. And if you can't, you can't. You know, if it would take you an extra 20 minutes to format a blog post in a way that a client would like, ideally, then don't offer it for free. If you can do it in an extra 5 minutes, then maybe consider offering it for free if they're a regular client.
Yeah, if you've already written the article and they suddenly say, "Oh, can we change it to something else?" It's reasonable to say, "Well, I've already done it. I'll do that one for you next time, maybe."
Yeah.
If you haven't started it yet, then say, "Yeah, absolutely, I'll do the new topic. That's totally fine."
Yeah, why not? It's no odds to you, is it?
That's it. And so do offer extra. You're not expected to go the extra mile every day, necessarily, mm-hmm. every week. But when something occurs to you, or if you're thinking, like Laurie said earlier, if somebody just seems a bit less enthusiastic than they used to be, that might be a good time to try and think of extra things you could do or ways you could just over-deliver a little bit. And it will make you feel good, and it will be good for your business, as well as pleasing the client.
Absolutely. And as Pip mentioned earlier, there are ways to see where you're going the extra mile and to incorporate that into your business in future.
Mm-hmm.
Because your business isn't static. It grows and evolves just as the needs of your clients grow and evolve.
Yeah.
And if you decide that, for example, going back to the WordPress thing, if you decide that you can offer that as another service, that makes you look really good.
Mm.
That makes you look really good because you're taking weight off your client's shoulders. And you're making yourself invaluable to them. And really, what more do you want, you know, to be paid for doing something that you enjoy and for delivering a really good service to your clients?
Well, exactly.
So now, I think that neatly brings us to the A Little Bird Told Me recommendations of the week.
It does indeed.
So this is a section where Philippa and I discuss something that we've spotted over the course of the last week that we think might be funny or interesting or useful to you in some way. It's just our extra value to you.
Yes, we're just going the extra mile and over-delivering.
Sticking with the theme. So, Philippa, darling Philippa.
Yes.
Your recommendation this week?
Well, something that Laurie and I have touched upon numerous times during this podcast is if you're self-publishing, there are certain things you can do for yourself, And there are certain things that are almost always best outsourced. And my recommendation this week is a humorous look at one of those very things. It is a blog that shows examples. It's called lousybookcovers.com.
Oh, brilliant. I think I'm going to like this.
And its subtitle is, "Just because you can design your own cover doesn't mean you should."
Oh, I've just clicked the link.
Yeah. And people submit their things they've spotted, lousy book covers, basically, all self-published ebooks that have just...
This is amazing.
Isn't it? I spent a good 2 hours going through the archives when I first found it. And the blog host does kind of quite... He's got various tags that he tags things. So bad font choice, pixelation, art for a refrigerator is my favourite. There's MS Paint Reborn.
Oh, I love it.
They are brilliant in their awfulness, frankly.
So funny.
Readability is another one. The number of these that I've seen where you cannot read the title because it's like red on a red background or it's a very funny blog, and it also does give a very clear message that these people presumably thought they'd done an okay job.
So often the case.
And yet, they are, like, unbelievable, some of them.
Isn't you running out of words just in pure shock?
I know, I'm scrolling through it again, and it does leave you quite speechless, doesn't it?
I love this.
And I think we will both choose our favourite lousy book cover off the site.
I think we should.
And I will link to those as well, because we then need to hear.
I think we should put them on our Facebook page.
Oh, that's a good idea.
If you come and have a look at facebook.com/freelancewritingpodcast, you can submit your favourites to us. We will mock them together because they deserve it.
So this blog is, first of all, hilarious. It will make you laugh and it will make you cringe more than you knew you could cringe. But it also, it does give a valuable lesson to self-publishers, I think.
Oh, if only they would listen. Oh, dear me.
And so that is my recommendation. And listeners, I think we can both safely say that give yourself a good hour when you click this link.
I think I might just quit my business and just spend the rest of my life looking at that link. It's amazing, listeners, honestly. I think I'm going to post this a lot. So my recommendation is comparatively boring. It's this whole business thing. Rather than looking at lousy book covers, it's something useful. So I thought, right, rather than being frivolous, I'll go with something useful. But now that like the boring aren't. But my link is HubSpot Freebie.
We love HubSpot.
We love HubSpot and we love freebies.
Well, yes.
In this instance, it is a free download. It's 50 customizable. That was what got me. Call to action templates. And the reason this caught my eye so much is not just that it's free and it's customizable so that you can adapt it to meet your own needs. It was brought to mind after I was asked for some advice on an article that somebody had written. And the thing that struck me immediately, and it's something that this person isn't by any means alone in doing, is that the article didn't have a clear call to action.
Yeah.
Now, it can be easy to get carried away as a freelance writer and think, oh, I must make this perfect and get the keywords in there and really make it very readable and wonderful and my language is great and that analogy in paragraph 4 was marvellous. And
yeah.
If there's no clear purpose to your writing, there is no purpose to your writing. There's no point.
Yeah, there's study after study after study that shows that writing something as simple as tell us what you think in the comments will make people tell you what they think in the comments.
Absolutely.
It's weirdly powerful, whether it's sign up for my mailing list, tweet this article. Telling people to do something has a surprisingly high success rate in making them do it.
Definitely. And you need to know how to do that. And in terms of articles, that's often language at the bottom.
Yeah.
like written calls to action. But when it comes to your website, it has to be quite visual, and things from the font to the size of the font to the color of the button to everything, the wording, that will all have a massive, massive effect. There are people who make a career out of split testing the results of this.
Indeed, conversion rate optimization.
Yes. You see, there's Pip, not just with the lousy book covers, but with the perfect phrases. It is conversion rate optimization. And you need to be able to measure how effective your marketing is going to be if you want to have any chance of making your website a success. And this free download from HubSpot, HubSpot is brilliant for inbound marketing particularly.
Yeah.
It's superb. And the article says, redesigning your call to action buttons can improve click-through rates by 1,300% or more.
Yeah. It's mind-blowing, isn't it? But you can always read a case study somewhere on the web of someone who changed their buy now button from blue to green and got 12 times the number of sales. And
it
seems to make no sense, but there's a lot of evidence of this stuff. What I really like about HubSpot is that they practice what they preach, because they're a company that is based on offering inbound marketing services to businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can hire them to do a lot of different inbound marketing things. But the way they get their business is entirely inbound marketing.
Yeah.
It's that they provide brilliant content. If you don't subscribe to them, then do. As if you do any amount of content marketing, you need to keep on top of HubSpot, because they do it. They provide great information about it, and by doing that, provide themselves with leads, which
Definitely. Is
what inbound marketing is.
And this is the important thing about a call to action, is that people feel that you're talking to them.
Yeah.
They feel like they have a say, that you're interacting with them, and not that you're just words on a page.
Yes. Yeah.
So if you can download this, it's 50 customizable call to action templates. They're colorful. Knowing HubSpot, they are all beautiful and marvelous, and they are visually arresting. And that is exactly what you need. You need to capture people's attention, because as we said, if you're in the right place at the right time, saying the right things, and likewise, if your prospective clients are in the right place at the right time, namely on your website, you need to be saying the right things in the right way to catch their attention. And a perfect way to do that is to have a customized call to action button.
Yeah.
So I'd say that brings us to the end of episode 62.
I think you're right. We also want to mention at this stage that for a while at least, we're going to trial doing these podcasts fortnightly rather than weekly. We really enjoy doing them. They take so much time that it's getting a bit unsustainable at times. And so what we're going to do, just give it a go, see how we get on doing them fortnightly. There are still tons of archives you can listen to if you really miss us. And we will be back with you in 2 weeks' time.
Absolutely. And we're always available on the Facebook page. We're still busy bees there, which is at facebook.com/freelancewritingpodcast, as well as at a little bird told me .podomatic.com homepage.
So come over and say hello. Let us know what you think of what we're doing, as long as it's nice. And I have been Philippa Willetts.
And I've been Laurie Hartshorn, and we will catch you in a fortnight's time.